Today, June the 12th, 2014. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and just how many computers I can actually fit into a one-bedroom apartment. I'm Morps, and tonight we have the BSV. The RU486. And the Madman.
He didn't prepare this.
For a moment, I thought he ran out of sound effects. I was going to be sad.
Well, it was either that or Toasty, so, you know.
I'd hope he'd have more than two sound effects.
Since I'm using this tablet, I mean, it works, although you didn't, with Madman, you didn't hear me screwing around with the thing earlier. It was having problems. I think it's about dead, truth be told. Anyways, so... I don't know. I've only got a handful of stuff loaded on it from the old soundboards, just enough to really do the show and get on with life. Because I don't know about you guys, but my job's kicking my butt. So.
Mondays kick my butt. The rest of the week hasn't been so bad so far.
Oh, I've been doing long-term data investigation without enough information to do it properly. It's like, yeah, nobody thought you really needed those logs, so we let them roll out. Great.
So you're supposed to do data investigation without the data?
You're catching on.
No one does an image of a computer after they need to investigate it.
No, they sweep it under the rug and hope nobody will notice, but that's...
Yeah, the rug gets really lumpy after a while, and the smell in the room is disgusting.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's why the website's behind. It's why the shows are being posted a week late, because I'm sitting there putting together the show notes for the next one. It's like, huh, I never posted last week's. So, but I've got, you know, that's why all the ideas I've had for the website, you know, haven't happened. I get home, it's like, I've stared at a screen long enough, I'm going to go outside. So, but...
outside?
Yeah, big blue room.
Ah, no respawn.
Right.
Good graphics.
Good graphics, no respawn. I guess where you are, hot as hell with flaming koalas.
Wait, don't know, flaming, like, is it gay mechanics, or somebody though, going around lighting the wildlife on fire? Because...
we're only lighting the gay ones on fire.
Not America. We don't discriminate against gays.
Wow.
And I was slow.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, just another station side note. You know, I forgot something very important. I'm drinking a Shock Top Honeycrisp Apple Wheat. Since Sard's not here, I felt I should be drinking a Shock Top. Are you? What are you
and
drinking?
And because Sard's not here, I feel I must say, fuck it. coffee.
Nice. Black and mixed up with Coke? Not even touching it. Alright, BSV, what do you got, man?
Still have my Angry Orchard. I like apples with alcohol.
Nice. Madman, tell me you're drinking something fancy.
I'm drinking Shock Top Lemon Shandy because it's summer and that's what you drink. The Apple Crisp is a fall beer.
I don't care. It's tasty.
I didn't say
apple cider. I said Apple Crisp.
He's making fun of me, not you.
No. Sorry, I was confused.
He's drinking the stuff that was brewed for fall. I'm drinking the stuff that was brewed for summer.
My Angry Orchard is crisp apple.
I've still got all that homebrew in the fridge, man. That's like winter beer.
There's a winter beer? Well,
that's because you moved it away from us.
That's true.
I'm out of that. I would have gladly taken a refill.
That stuff came out pretty good, actually. So.
Whoa, back. There's a winter beer?
Most stouts are considered a winter beer.
Darker, heavier beers are usually drank beer? During the winter.
There's a winter beer?
Yeah, we drink more than Bud Light over here. Are you?
It all does the same thing.
No, it does not.
I haven't been doing it wrong for 30 years, man. There's a winter beer.
And apparently fall, summer, and spring beers, too.
I have to reassess my entire life.
Well, are you doing on this show? Are you where you live? There is only two seasons, you know, crazy hot and crazy cold. So you can be forgiven for not knowing.
There is so much you Americans need to learn about getting drunk. You don't need to make excuses or play games. You just get drunk. It's easy.
No, we do that too.
And drink.
but if we wanted to do that, it's called Natty Light, and that's a horrible beer. But it's cheap. You get like 1,000 of them for $1.75.
I'll take.
No one drinks it, but everyone seems to buy the shit.
I'll take a pallet. Oh, that reminds me. They've just started selling Pabst Blue Ribbon here.
I'm so sorry.
Don't even ask how much it costs. Oh my god, it is so expensive. It is like a premium fucking beer. And hipsters are buying it left, right, and center. It's fucking hilarious. They're
Pabst
paying
Blue
60
Ribbon?
Bucks for 24 Pabst Blue Ribbons.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
60 for
that hurt like a lot, actually.
Yeah. $52 American dollars.
You do realize the reason hipsters drink it over here is because it's like dirt cheap, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called. I guess that's called missing the point.
I want to load up a boat full of Pabst Blue Ribbon and sail to Australia now.
Yeah, it's up there as a premium beer. That's how I'm labeling it.
Oh, hold up. I can actually bring a boatload of good beer and sell it for that price and still make a killing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. As long as you pay all the 75% tax on top.
Oh, God, I'm not going to pay any damn taxes. I'm bootlegging this shit. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but, we had Philip Morris announce that they were going to sell cheaper quality cigarettes at half the price. And the government went, no, we're just going to double tax it then. Because they were going to bring the price of cigarettes down to $16 a pack. And the government went, nope, they're still going to charge out at $35 a pack.
Oh, that's
even if it's a poorer quality.
They're trying to intentionally keep them expensive so people won't smoke.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not really much for smoking, but at the same time, that seems kind of like a dick move.
I'm opposed to all sin taxes.
Yeah.
Do a straight sales tax for everything. Whether it's on poontang, cocaine, a car, candy bar, whatever.
Well, again, taxes meant for raising money for the government, not to control...
Behavior, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So, anyways, last little bit of station news. Most of the other shows are on hiatus. I think the only other show that's running actively right now is Lore's. And it's spotty whether or not we're going to get that one live. But he is doing his shows. I just don't think that they're going to go out live very often until we get a system set up for him to do so. And I'm working on that. I just haven't had much time to devote to it. So hopefully we can make it a lot easier to just start doing the live shows again. I'll tell you about that here after a bit, are you? It'll be different, but I think I can make it easy to use.
Yeah, I have no idea when IHN's coming back.
That's a suave thing anyways. That's when he wants to bring it back. But I'm going to be building a rig on a server I've got in Linux for doing the shows live.
Okay.
The interface will be different, but once I show it to you, you'll be fine with it, I'm sure, because I think I can make it work better than the SAM Broadcaster Windows mess.
So, alrighty.
But yeah, it'll be log in, run a script, your windows will all pop up, and you'll be good to go. So it won't
sounds good.
It won't be bad. Or nobody will use it, and it'll be horrible, and we'll be right back to where we are now.
Either way.
Either way. We'll get something going on here. So let's hop right into it here. Always a fun discussion topic. Crappy passwords.
Yay.
And, you know, because doing passwords correctly is so damned hard. CDNet had a story. A couple of kids found the manual to an ATM machine online for, like, one of the ATMs in a gas station, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I've got that manual.
They went up to it after reading the manual to see how to get it into, like, a configuration services mode. And it worked.
Using the PUC code?
Yeah, just and it worked. So they said, oh, crap, it's asking for a password. Well, the story suggests that it was 123456, but it doesn't confirm that. So it was probably 123456.
Still running the default password, and if I am familiar with the same hack on the ATM, all you're doing is changing the value numbers on the drawers. So a 20 drawer, you rechange the value of that to a 10, and then you change the value of the 50s to a 20. And
oh, that's not what they did. What they did was even funnier. So
alrighty,
they tried to tell the bank that, hey, your ATM manual is online and the password was 123456. And the bank didn't believe him. It was Bank of Montreal, so this was in Canada, which is probably why these kids aren't in jail. Because if they did put that in the States, it'd be, you know, Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and they'd be hanging them from their toes out in front of the White House right now. But the bank didn't believe them. So they went back to the system and made some changes. They changed the screen to say, you know, it's been hacked, don't use it. And then they changed the fee on it from like a nickel on the dollar down to like 0.01 or something, you know, like the lowest setting they could put it.
Good guy hackers.
And dumped a bunch of reports out of the system and then took it back to the bank. And then the bank, you know, got it fixed. No word yet on whether or not they're being sued. But, you know, the only reason the bank even knew about it is these kids went and told them.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and what's sad is they were being good Samaritans, and they could end up in jail or losing their property.
Yeah. It's real sad. But, I mean, yeah, somebody left the password 123456. Like, really? You're not going to come up with a bank. I mean, even if it's the same password for a bank, you know, it's like the Bank of Montreal's ATM code is. I mean, they should at least come up with something, right? Not just leave the default. I know a lot of ATMs are not actually ran by the bank. You know, somebody buys them and they're serviced by the bank. But still, I mean, a few basic requirements are not outlandish. But by the same note, I got a story from the Register. Apparently, Avast sat down and went through a bunch of their hackers that they've hacked database kind of thing and dumped out their passwords and found that the most common one was the word hacked.
So,
apparently 59% of passwords only used characters. Now, these are passwords of people they've you know, that Avast is classified as hackers. Now, I'm not so sure about that, but because, you know, a lot of these people are probably people who buy crimeware kits. It doesn't mean they know what they're doing, right? But,
yeah.
So 59% of the passwords only use characters, no numbers or special characters. Only 6% included a non-alphanumeric character, and many samples in the analysis use default passwords like R57, C99, password, or your pass. So even the quote-unquote bad guy hackers aren't using good passwords.
I want to find that hard to believe, but...
I don't either.
Yeah.
It's not that hard, people.
Well, apparently it is, because, I mean, I'm dealing with this at work, right? I put together a password manager at work, and... the first thing they had me do was really severely weaken the encryption I had put on it. It's like, yeah, you know, we don't like the fact that, you know, that you have to have this offline password that's stored in a safe. Can you just make it come on and be available? It's like, you're missing the point. But, you know, the people.
But remembering a password isn't that difficult.
No, it is not. Now, remembering a different password for every website might change that a little bit. But
I don't go with every website. I go with every system that I'm in.
Well, yeah. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. So, I mean, but obviously nobody's doing passwords right, or at least very few people, I should say. So you think about it, what's a good password? Well, a good password is one that is not easily guessed or quickly guessed by somebody who's not supposed to have it. And that doesn't mean that you or, people around you who probably, somebody you don't care having access to easily being able to figure out, oh, your password is your pet's name plus a birthday or something like that. I mean, that's easy for you to guess. But, for somebody who doesn't know you, that's hard to guess. But for somebody who has who's your friend on Facebook, that's probably easy for them to guess. So that's probably not such a good password.
I wouldn't do that because, if you're any good at what you're doing, you're going to socially look them up for every hint you can get of a password before you even try.
Yeah.
If you're just going that way at it.
Yeah. So, but you're right, which means it really just should not be easily guessable at all. But, I mean, I can see the argument where you got to be able to remember the thing somehow, right? So if you can at least come up with a personal system so that you can get your own passwords, I can acknowledge that. But really,
most password attacks are just random brute force, aren't they? They're not really targeted anymore.
Depends. If you're talking about drive-by, mass collection, yeah, it's brute force, it's rainbow tables. If you're talking about targeted social engineering, that's a very different game. That's exactly what RU is talking about, where you find all their online profiles and troll them all for any useful information. That's where you call their parents pretending to be, their boss and trying to get information out of them. That's where you're dropping flash drives in front of their car in the parking lot. Might be going a little far with that one.
Yeah, that would be your higher end. Someone's paying you to do this?
Yes.
Or you've entered creepy, creepy stalker mode.
When you're making the hair doll, that's... So there's both. There's the highly targeted, somebody's trolling through everything you've ever posted online to figure out what your password might be. And then there's the not-so-targeted, somebody got into a forum database and they're just trying to crack anything they can, right? So
I mean, if you're going to the point where you're dropping USB sticks, you've already taken their garbage. I mean, once you've stepped out of that boundary of using Multigo and other tools to scrape data, and you're in car parks, you're going all the way at that point. This is the point where you're boning up on your lockpicking skills because you're about to enter that house when they go to work the next day.
Yeah.
Or that night when they go to sleep for that extra creepy feeling.
And when we get down to Digital Dojo, I've got a tool for that. Well, not the lockpicking part, but...
They're called bump keys. We've already done that one.
Did we do bump keys on Digital Dojo?
Yeah, we've done bump keys.
I believe after you got back from one of the cons, we did bump keys.
Cool. I don't remember doing bump keys, but that doesn't mean we didn't do it. We've done 160 of the damn things.
Well, either way, bump key is when you take a blank key and just beat the shit out of a lock with it.
Close. That's where you take a blank key and you cut it down a deep notch in every part of the key. That way you can slide it back out of the lock just a hair and be pushing on all the pins. And then you smack it with a hammer. Well, usually a little piece of plastic, but you bump it to get all of the pins moving in the lock while you're trying to turn it. That way they'll catch. So it's kind of like raking the lock, except instead of possibly, slipping a disc or catching a pin and ripping it out, you're just smacking the thing with a hammer till it opens up.
Wow, you guys are totally doing it wrong.
Oh yeah? How are you doing it, are you?
I take a flat bit of steel, weld it to the head of a bolt, and then I sharpen it into a spike, drive it into the lock, then use a ratchet. Turn it.
Okay, that one doesn't leave the lock intact.
If you're bumping a lock, you don't want to leave it intact.
Well, actually, no. A bump lock, if you do it right, will leave it. Or bumping a lock will leave it intact, usually. You don't want to do it too much, you'll break it. But, so the reason you pick a lock is because you have the time to enter without leaving evidence that you were there.
Yeah.
Versus you just need to get in the door, so you kick the door down. So, but yeah. But back on passwords, ideally, your username should be a secret, too. Now, a lot of systems, like no systems, provide a good way to do that. But, because if you think about it, you need a username and a password to log in, right? Well,
yep.
If you already have the username, that's half of it. The problem is, most websites, the username is what they use to ID you on the website. That's the name that shows up next to your posts. So, But, no one does that. So, and, here's what we were talking about a minute ago. Your passwords should not be shared between systems. In other words, every system and every website should use a different password so that if one is hacked or you've got a dirty sysadmin or, a website gets a keylogger installed or the database dumped, or maybe your boss is running a keylogger on your work systems, because that happens way more often than you'd think. That way they don't have access to your private stuff. Or, if you're doing something privately and you use the same password as your job and a website gets popped, somebody might have access to all your work stuff, especially if you use the same email address for a lot of your stuff. You think about it. If the same username and password will get you into 20 different forums and your Facebook and your email, well, I'm not going to try to hack, Gmail or Yahoo. Never mind the fact that Yahoo's not got a great reputation. But going after those could be moderately difficult. They're systems of size. Whereas, the little 20-user forum you hang out on to talk about, car engines or Dungeons and Dragons or bottle cap collecting or something. it's... laughing at Iron Angel in the chat room. He just said, fuckity. But, these little, forums, terrible security on most forums. They don't even use, HTTPS when you log in. So if I go after that forum and get a username and password for your account, and that'll get me into your email or your Facebook or, your corporate account, I just got into your major system without actually having to do the work to get into a major system. Make sense?
Yes.
And then there's the extreme of this where the admins decide you need to change your password every X amount of days and you can't reuse like the last 20 passwords.
Well, there is some logic to the make you change your password and don't reuse it. The idea is that if you have to change your password often enough, it doesn't matter so much if somebody manages to guess one of your passwords because they're not going to get to use it for very long. That concept is an old one. I'm not sure I really agree with it as far as security goes, because if you force somebody to change their password every 15 days, they end up writing it down on the Post-it note and sticking it under their keyboard
Their
computer monitor or... on the mouse pad that says passwords on it.
Or when you're going through training coordinator says, I have this nice .exe file that I've created to store my passwords in. I suggest you do the same. And then I facepalm.
Kill yourself.
Not that anyone has ever suggested that to me in a professional setting.
I'm going in for my computer, my new job I just took, right? Doing information security. Yeah, my job title is information security engineer, right? So I'm going in for my new job, and the HR is like, yeah, I keep all my passwords in a passwords.xl file. It's like, no!
let me guess, it's even labeled passwords.
So
yeah.
If you can't remember your password, there's a simple way of keeping it secured. You write it down on paper so it's not in the computer, then lock that piece of paper away.
What you're talking about where you print out the password and you put it on a piece of paper and lock it in a safe, that's what you do with your backup Active Directory recovery accounts. That's what you do with the built-in administrator accounts that are normally disabled. That's what you use when all your sysadmins are on the same bus and, it goes off the road. And that's why you write that password down and put it in a safe.
But again, all passwords, at least in my opinion, should be kept at some sort of security.
Absolutely.
But again, I'm apparently not normal for passwords. So.
See, but the thing is...
I'm currently secured in my brain, and enough alcohol will cause them to disappear.
See, now here's the thing, though. No one actually does that. No one keeps separate passwords for everything.
I've come up with a novel way, I think. I'm either going to sound incredibly smart or incredibly stupid. You know those Finder word games?
Yeah.
User in your channel timed out.
Bust the madman. I got one of them that's circled in different colors for different websites.
Oh, that works. Mm.
So even if someone does get hold of the paper, they're still not going to be able to decipher which is which.
Cycross is talking about, you know, taking the website name and using that with some function of your own to come up with a password for each website. These are all good suggestions. And when I say no one does this, I'm not meaning literally no one. I'm just saying not a lot of people do it. It is the proper thing to do, because if a site gets popped, they get the credential for that site, not, you know, your Facebook, your PayPal, your bank. And you know, it's like Madman was mentioning earlier about rotating your passwords every 15 days, and they have to be 36 characters long, and you can't reuse any of the last 400 passwords you've ever used. You know, there's a lot of bad advice floating around about password management. That idea of rotating them every so often is a very old one. It comes from the idea that people are going to share their passwords with their coworkers. So if you make them change it every so often, that means the old password that somebody found written under, you know, written on the keyboard or written on the desk blotter is maybe not any good anymore, as opposed to the X through it and the next password written under it. That's the real problem with making them change their password so often, is they end up writing it down and, you know, sticking it on the post-it note on their monitor, right? Which kind of defeats the whole point.
Yeah.
So, now password managers are good. You know, it's there's a lot of good ideas. If you've got a system that you use, and maybe you don't need a password manager if you have a system that's good enough. Of course, that system runs into problems when, you know, like eBay a couple of weeks ago said, "Hey, everyone, go change your password right effing now!" Right? Well, what do you do if you have to maintain three or four different systems, or do you just put a two at the end? Because then you start getting on that same problem if your password starts increasing incrementally. So, password managers are good. Personally, for small scale stuff, I like KeePass, and that's actually one I use a little bit. And I think there's KeePass compatible Android apps. I haven't actually looked on the iPhone yet since I got moved back to that at work, but. But yeah, KeePass is good because it's a nice little database thing, and you can make as many
user joined your channel.
There's Madman.
Welcome back.
Hello. Part of the internet between me and whatever server this TeamSpeak is on.
I recommend finding that part of the internet and yelling at it
loudly.
So, but you know, KeePass is nice because you can make lots of password databases and assign different master passwords, or even like use a hash file. So, you know, you need this picture of your cat to unlock your passwords. You know, it's kind of like the TrueCrypt thing where you could use lots of different things to generate your key. But, you know, that one's local. And the thing you have to remember with KeePass is if all your passwords are stored on your desktop in your KeePass database, what do you do if you're out on the road and need to use a laptop or your phone? Well, you're kind of screwed because all your passwords are stored in KeePass database, and you've done the right thing where they're all different and they're all complex. Well, you're never going to remember them. And do not store your passwords in an unencrypted Excel file called passwords.xls, please.
Yeah.
Or passwords.txt or passwords.doc.
And if you are going to do that, please leave it on the desktop for convenience for me.
Yeah. But, of course, then you've got the online password managers, too. You know, things like LastPass and a few others out there that did it. Not LastPass. Or is it LastPass I'm thinking of? That's one of them. Mm. Yeah. But they had a security issue not too long ago, too, if I remember correctly, where they thought something might have gotten out, so they told everyone to go change their master passwords. The thing with password managers, though, is you do have to maintain that master password, right? And whereas it certainly reduces the attack surface that you get with, you know, using the same password everywhere, if somebody figures out you're using, you know, say LastPass, and they figure out what your master password is, you might as well have used the same password for everything because they've got it, access to everything. So if you are going to use a password manager, you want to split up what goes into them. You want to maintain multiple password managers. So like KeePass, you don't want one database for all your passwords. You'll have one database for passwords for crap that doesn't matter, forums and, you know, Facebook. And you know, basically, your Tumblr login and your bank login should not be under the same master password. So, you know, and the nice thing with KeePass, of course, you're making multiple databases. You can have one database dedicated to your, you know, troll Tumblr accounts. But, yeah, so you can get organized with it if you really want. But, you know, again, if you're not using you just don't want the same master password protecting the stupid crap as your bank, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Password length, they should be long. You want them to be long enough that they're not in any of the standard rainbow tables that are floating around. You don't want to use a dictionary word. They call it a dictionary attack for a reason. If you are going to use dictionary words, you probably want to string about six of them together. You know, use the whole passphrase thing. I know several people who use sentences for their passwords, and they'll replace the spaces with like an exclamation point or a question mark or a period or something.
Or if you're good and you understand phonetic spelling, spell words that way.
Yeah, spell words that wrong. That's always great fun for screwing with people. And you know those little password hint boxes all these modern operating systems ask you to fill out? You know, give yourself a hint for your password. I highly recommend putting something insulting in there. Like, you know, if you click, you know, show hint, you know, put something in there that will make you cry when you're desperate to get back into your system and you click that button.
Yeah. Same for the password reset stuff that has questions.
It's like, what's your mother's maiden name? 46. I mean, you know.
Lucifer.
Well, so that one might be real. you know, what's your favorite color? All your base R belong to us, right? I mean, you know, put in something. And you can put those in your password manager so that you can remember what it is if you ever need to use them. But, yeah, you want to put nonsensical stuff in there because, you know, if everything they need to reset your password can be found in Facebook or if you're a politician, public documents, you can have the whole Sarah Palin Yahoo account thing all over again. So, I don't know if anybody remembers that back, you know, when Sarah Palin was a thing, somebody hacked into her Yahoo email. Because they had done enough news stories on her personal life, they were able to answer all the password reset questions.
Maiden name, everything.
Maiden name, you know, something about her husband in there, because they had to do was go look up what high school she went to. There it was. I don't remember the rest of them. Kid did jail time, though, for it, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah, he got pwned pretty hard for that.
So, yeah. So, you know, people, quit using shit passwords. Making it way too damned easy. Although, I guess in my case, it's job security, so... whatever.
They could throw two shit passwords together.
And that would be better. You're right. So.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And then password in between those.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, password. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Exclamation point. You're good.
All right. Let's go ahead and go into news stories here. Wow, we talked about passwords a lot longer than I thought we would. So, anyways, first one up is from the Inquirer. The NSA is claiming their own systems are so complicated that they don't know how to stop data deletions. Basically, the EFS has sued the NSA for, you know, listening to everybody's phone calls and reading your email and feeding your Facebook photos into their facial recognition software. And the NSA has basically said their systems are so complex that they cannot stop the automatic, you know, data deletions without, like, shutting the whole system down. So, in other words, they don't know how to work their own shit. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm going to say, that's not a complication. That's stupidity on the part of the NSA as a whole.
And I'm going bullshit.
Yeah, in other words, okay, here we go. According to the Washington Post, the NSA Deputy Director Richard Leggett filled out court documents explaining that a requirement to preserve all data acquired under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act presents significant operational problems, only one of which is that the NSA may have to shut down all systems and databases containing Sector 702 information. So the NSA is claiming that their FISA obligations outweigh a court order to preserve their data.
Man, no.
Yeah, no, they're deleting evidence. They're deleting their evidence so it can't be used against them.
But if a private individual, say the tax office, came in and said, look, open your books up on your business, actually, we can't. My business is so complicated that if I was to open my books up and show you the actual truth, we'd have to shut down multiple parts of the business. Therefore, well, it's just not viable because what we put out is a product that's too big to fail and the community needs it. So fuck off.
Well, there is some precedent for, you know, not having court systems or court orders, you know, put you out of business. But you have to prove that that court order would put you out of business, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, it is kind of a catch-22. But not that that seems to matter. I mean, the Mega Upload guy had his stuff taken away from him without ever going to court, if I remember correctly. So, you know, there's that.
I'm thinking contempt of court charges must be filed against these people.
That would be fantastic.
Or at least against the head of the NSA.
Problem is, they are the courts.
Yeah.
Courts are technically a separate branch of the government. I want a judge with fucking balls. And a death wish, because he's going to be assassinated as soon as he says.
No, not assassinated, suicided.
Yeah, we found him in the hot tub with the lid closed. He must have closed himself in.
Yeah, didn't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
Stabbed himself in the back 37 times and then hung himself.
But why was the room we found him in locked from the outside?
Man, that guy's good at suicide. He locked it from the outside.
Oh yeah, look, it says here he googled suicide. That's how he did it. Yep. Yeah. He was googling suicide for quite a while. We know because we're the NSA. We've got his info. We can't show it to you because our systems are too complicated. But we can tell you about it.
All right.
Wow. It's just getting too easy to poke fun at these people now.
Isn't it?
It'll come to a point where they're like, yeah, well, you're taking away the integrity of the office, so it's illegal now to make fun of it. I'm sorry.
Don't give them ideas.
Well, the thing was, the article went on talking about how due to the massive unpopularity of the NSA right now, they thought that they'd have a hard time get backing for that opinion that, they, you know, it's what they're doing is more important than complying with a court case. So...
But yeah, unless but someone pushes it, it doesn't matter whether it's...
And when you got people in your Congress who are standing up and going, well, and this just happened, you won the primary, I forget his name. God spoke to me and told me to run for politics. And there's not one single reporter in that room going, excuse me, what did God's voice sound like?
Well, kind of booming, you're electing, actually. You know when you play at the microphone and you have
that are hearing a pretend friend tell them that they should run for office, and that's why they won, not because of voters or anything, because God helped them win, because God was on their side. I feel sorry for that. Dude, it makes fucking no sense.
Well, let's look at the happy side. Rand Paul is suing the NSA.
How's that happy?
How's a senator suing the NSA?
Yeah.
They tapped his phone. He decided to start a class action lawsuit suing them for breaching his Fourth Amendment rights.
He'll get the same closed door as everybody else gets with the NSA. You know, they'll be as protected as the Fed.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the next one here. Researchers have found 207,000 publicly accessible baseboard management controllers that can be hacked with a handful of basic commands and config flaws despite previous warnings about the problem. A worldwide scan of the IPMI protocol identified over 2,300,000. Oh, wait. Why is the number changing in the story here? Anyways, BMCs exposed to the internet. Okay, because not all of those are vulnerable. Upwards of which 90% could be compromised with just a handful of basic configuration and protocol weaknesses, Farmer wrote. So I guess I should explain what IPMI is. Too bad Sard's not on, because he'd be losing his mind over this story. IPMI as a protocol has a lot of problems. There's not really a lot of security built into it. So IPMI is a management... It's a baseline management protocol. It's a way of managing your systems in your data center, among other things, without actually having to go physically touch all these machines. IPMI is... It depends on the implementation of it, but at least in the data centers... Like Dell and HP have historically had all kinds of problems with these, but it would let you set, you know, BIOS configuration and, you know, what server should I boot from, network address controls, all this different stuff you could set with IPMI. Some of the more basic ones are basic things like reboot the machine and make a light flash on the front so you know which physical box it is. Some of the more advanced ones, you get full-on remote management consoles and... Like voltage information from the power supply and all this crazy stuff, you know, and all this stuff is fantastic for managing your data center, except they've plugged it straight into the flipping internet.
Nice. I shouldn't know any of this stuff about your data center, but I can have, I don't know, all the cooling fans in one of your servers just shut off because...
Yes, you can.
I can key in the right key buttons and... Oh, that
some of the more advanced
terrible.
Ones, you can connect to it as though you're sitting at the keyboard and monitor.
Wow.
And if you want to be less destructive and just want to do fun things, you could try to find one that has all the lights set up in a grid and... to a pixel video show.
Well, I mean, you know, you see pictures of those data centers, which are just rows and rows and rows of machines. It might not be that hard. So, you know, you just got to figure out which one's which. But, you know, the opposite of that, instead of turning all the fans off, you could turn them all up to max. Which, you know, in the short term would just make a lot of noise and waste a lot of power. In the long run, you start killing fans, which is just as bad as turning them off. At least turning them off, all you got to do is go turn them back on.
Yeah.
But if you blow out a couple hundred fans in a data center, that whole rack might be going down.
But
you
am I the only other one here with a weird fetish to get into a data room and just move two cables?
I threatened to do that once at another job. It was hilarious. No.
I threatened to do that once at someone else's job, and I'm not allowed in the building. Not that I would ever cause any cellular company in my state.
Nice.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's a funny story, but you have to know what IPMI is for that, so I didn't know how much... All right, let's next story here is from actually I got this from a couple of places, but the story I looked at is from the seattlepie.com. Comcast will begin activating a feature in its Aeris Touchtone telephony wireless gateway modems. So for anybody not paying attention, that's the little box Comcast gives you with Xfinity on the side, that it's your Wi-Fi access point, your router, and your cable modem all in one box.
Yo.
they're going to set up public Wi-Fi hotspots alongside the residential internet private home network. Basically, if you've seen any of the routers out there that have the option for a guest network, that's what they're doing. They're turning them all on. And other Comcast customers will be able to log into the hotspots for free using a computer or smartphone. And basically, you log in with your Comcast name and you can use somebody else's internet. Now, supposedly, they're going to be segmenting them off, you know, in their own network, separate from, you know, the person who's actually paying for their internet connection, or, well, that person's wireless network. It's supposed to be separate. It's supposed to be, it's not supposed to affect the speed. So I guess it's supposed to prioritize the person who's you know, living there versus the guest user, and, you know, just a little. Cycros, it's a separate Wi-Fi access point. They've got a couple of different radios in them. If you've ever seen a Wi-Fi router that offers a guest network and can offer two different SSIDs at the same time, that's how. But yeah, you're right. It's basically a subnet, or it's actually a VLAN if you really want to get into it. But yeah, Comcast is my only internet provider where I live right now, so I've got one of their boxes in here, and you should have heard them losing their shit on the phone when I changed the internal passwords on that thing. It's like, oh, sir, you've got to reset your router. You've got to reset it back to factory. Why? It's working fine. But I can't get into it, sir. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
And the problem is? I'm not hearing a problem with this. Did I pay you? And there's not a problem with this.
So I reset it so they could get in there, right? And they get in there and they do all their stuff. And I change the password back. And then 5 minutes later, I get the phone call. Sir, we need to reset your modem again. No, you don't. It's working fine. Thanks. But we've lost the ability to manage it. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
If I need you to do something, I'll reset it. But sir, we need to be able to. All right. Look, I'm not resetting the modem unless I have something I need you to fix. Okay, sir. They didn't know what to do because I just wasn't going to do it. They were probably going, huh? Why is there another router plugged into this thing? And all we're seeing is VPN traffic. That's strange. anyways. Yeah, it's just funny when they're like, but we need to be able to see what you're doing on the network. No, you don't.
You're one of those dirty, filthy terrorist hackers, aren't you? You paying cash and keep your curtains drawn.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyone, next up story, Psychros actually sent me a different version of it, but I already had this link. Pretty much, the story I've got's from CNET. Go ahead and throw the link in the chat room there. The 11th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals unanimously ruled on Wednesday that police must obtain a warrant to track a mobile user's location data. This means that cell phone companies are not obligated to hand over users' location history to police unless a warrant is provided. Yeah.
They're not obligated, but they will without a warrant.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're not obligated, but, you know, the way the law is written, if the third party is willing to hand it over, they don't need it. So, there's that. And it didn't actually... It didn't actually help the guy because he was still convicted of robbery. They ruled that it was still okay to use the mobile phone data. Just next time get a warrant. That was literally the ruling.
Hey, pro tip, next time you go burgle a house, don't take your fucking phone. I mean, we've got a generation of retarded criminals who can't leave their smartphone alone. Is that the fucking problem?
But... How is he supposed to
take his selfies,
post pictures on his Facebook and tweet that he's burgling the place?
I don't want to do a back in my day rant.
Does that may incriminate me slightly?
Well, just use Bob instead of RU-46. That way we can blame Bob.
But back again, in my day when I was committing a felony, I didn't brag about it on the damn internet and post evidence for the cops.
In case anybody's wondering, Bob is a broom we stuck in a brick and tied a Hawaiian shirt on.
He's made employee of the month, 3 months running, and everyone hates him. Because
he still does more than all of us around the office. For criminal proceedings, our offices are in Sweden.
Oh, so many jokes, so little time.
Yes, I know.
It's like, yep, just send the legal threats to Koba, and...
The big problem with this ruling is it doesn't say who owns the data. I think the individual users should own their own data.
Well, in Europe, that's kind of the way it is. That's why Google has to go through... I didn't do the news story, but Google has to accept all these people who want their information removed requests, which I think is hilarious because all they're filtering is search results, not the actual data, because for the most part, Google's not holding that information. They're just linking to crap. So
There are certain certain individuals out there right now who are actually... let's just say that a number of individuals on the first day who applied to have the search terms removed were pretty hardcore sex offenders. And let's just say there's a lot of effort going involved to make sure that data does not disappear from Google. Let's just say that. Because there's some shit you should be able to find on Google by just spelling it wrong.
Nice.
And if you're listening carefully there, you'll figure out how it's being done. Spelling it wrong.
You know, and the sad part is there are people who are going to make very serious arguments that, no, we need the government to be able to track where anybody is at any time, just in case.
No, you don't. But
I'm not letting these fuckers off the hook. Oh, wait, well, man. If you're just some stupid slut who showed her tits and then needs to get it removed, you don't have to worry about what's happening. But if you're a fucking sex offender who raped a child... Your shit ain't going away, buddy. Everybody's going to fucking know who you are.
The reason I was thinking in the States that ruling should say the individuals own their own data is Comcast, it doesn't matter if they don't need a warrant to release my stuff. If I own my data, they suddenly do need a warrant to release my stuff. It's my data. It's not Comcast anymore. So they can't voluntarily release my shit.
Yeah,
the cops need to get a warrant.
Let's go see. They've actually got a PDF to the ruling here. It's on Scribd. Let's just see. Oh, wait, this is all going to be in legal speak, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, currently, I don't own my data.
Prosecution offered... Here it is. I'm going to assume it's the bit that's underlined. Prosecution also offered records obtained from cell phone service providers... evidencing that Davis and his co-defendant had placed and received cell phone calls in close proximity to the locations of each of the charged robberies around the time. Yeah, that's it's dude going, hey, buddy, guess what I just did? Except for Mayor's jewelry. Okay. Davis prevented objection to the cell phone location evidence, claiming that government's obtaining such evidence without a warrant is a violation of his Fourth Amendment rights. So... sentenced Davis... Subsequently, the district court sentenced Davis on all counts. So it didn't even help. So it's only it's error on appeal. I'm just quickly looking through here to see if it says who actually owns the data. Location information includes records of calls, cell tower obtained evidence not by warrant but by order. So it's not because... So, yeah, they didn't even ask who owned it. They ordered the phone company to give it up without a warrant. So...
Just think of it like... If it's data, you don't own it. Just think of it like that.
That's probably not a bad way to go, truthfully.
If you're going to commit a crime, leave your digital shit at home.
Yeah. That's the truth. Let's do the next one here. This one's from Ars Technica. AT&T is trying to buy DirecTV. They claim that less competition in the video delivery service will mean lower prices. I'm not kidding. That's actually the claim they're making. They also admit in their filings that UVerse, their video service, cannot compete against Comcast or Time Warner Cable. So basically in their filings with the government, they're admitting that their UVerse TV service has failed miserably and they're buying DirecTV to compete in the space. And they're also promising a bunch of bribes, side benefits to the government. They promised to follow net neutrality rules for a few years, and they're going to offer their crappy DSL and rural areas for $35 a month. So, the sad part is they'll probably get it.
Yep.
I love that. It's like, yeah, we'll follow net neutrality for a few years. Promise. Scout's honor.
Fingers crossed behind my back. You can't see it. No take backs.
I'm not seeing how it really affects net neutrality. Dish
it doesn't.
Didn't offer internet.
Well, yeah, they did. It was terrible, but they did.
Every place I know of that did internet, AT&T was already supplying it. You were in Owensboro. Dish didn't do internet. They did their internet through AT&T.
I never really looked into it. I just always saw that it was part of their offering. So
yeah,
I didn't realize they were subletting.
Same thing at AT&T up there. If you wanted TV, they directed you to Dish. They promised a bunch of discounts that you never got.
Yeah. All right, let's do another one here. This one's from The Verge. Facebook is now going to use your browsing data when determining what ads to show you, not just the like buttons you've clicked. So they claim that Facebook is going to be the intermediary, so they're not going to actually share your browsing history with advertisers, for now. At least that's what they're saying. And they're going to have a little drop-down next to their ads, so you can tell them whether or not you like them.
The number of porn ads have just skyrocketed.
Well, here's the thing. You know how they're getting this, right? They're getting it from the like button, whether or not you click it. Just the fact that that like button was displayed in your browser window means that Facebook knows you viewed it. So, they're doing it by IP, too. Unless you left yourself signed into Facebook, in which case they know who you are because you've got the cookie. But, for one, what does this mean for people who share internet connections? Because if you didn't click on that like button because...
shared internet hilarity.
Well, think about it. Madman's, making the joke about all the porn, but I wouldn't put it past some of these porn websites to put the Facebook like button right below their videos. I mean, that seems like something Motherless would do, I'm just saying. But
E-fucked. If they don't do it, I'm doing it for them.
Who was it? Was it Big Brother who started liking some porn thing and
kept
getting ads for it?
Yeah, it was. So yeah, that's I knew it was one of them because he was doing it. I just don't know which one it was.
Yeah, and it was showing up on his friend's status that Big had liked this certain porn.
All right, X-Hamster. They're saying X-Hamster has it in the chat room.
Wow.
So
how quick was that?
Hey, the internet's honest with us, man. Come on. But if you think about it, a couple of years back, isn't this exactly what the EFF was worried about with the like button?
Yep.
And they're...
They were told they were conspiracy theorists and fucking tin hat wearers.
And here they are. So, there's a couple of different Firefox add-ons for blocking this crap. NoScript is probably the best one. I think there are some specific ones that will do the Facebook buttons and some of the other social networks. But,
Why do people click the like button anyway?
I don't know.
Why do people get on Facebook?
I don't know.
People like to click stuff.
That's why they have cookie craze.
Yeah.
Although, I do have to say for the target and ad thing, I'm still confused at how they started targeting me the ad for argon gas.
Well, they know what kind of porn you're looking at. And
Wait, ever since
I want to know that type of pun.
Ever since I got a Gmail account, this shit that YouTube shows me that it thinks I might like. Wow, YouTube doesn't know me at all.
Well, YouTube is just getting annoying now, because it got signed into on a couple of my Android tablets. So, like, I click a link to go watch a YouTube video, it loads it in the corner, minimized, and then starts showing me all the suggestions of things YouTube thinks I should be watching, not the thing I actually just clicked on to watch. So they're really getting annoying at trying to tell you what you should watch.
And some of the ads, they're practically shows in themselves. I think I watching YouTube without ad blocker on, I got a video ad that was an hour long for a 10-minute video.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Wow.
On some of my mobile stuff, you know, of course you don't get some of the ad blocking that you can get on the PC. And, you know, you'll get a 30-second ad for a 10-second video.
Makes sense.
And I've clicked off more videos than I can think, because it's like I'm not watching a minute ad for whatever the hell this video is. So usually because it plays the same damn ads over and over again too. But I mean they're just killing themselves with this because it's so damned aggressive about it. Why do you think all these add-ons exists? The fact that people have all these add-ons for blocking all this crap shows just how aggressive they're being. So,
I think it's because people are just immune to it now.
Yeah.
Boy, they've made it so difficult for the average end user to figure out how to use this shit that they don't even bother to just watch the ad now. It's all part of it.
Yeah, Iron Angel, he's talking about in the chat room, he had no idea YouTube had ads because he's always been running ad block. I was the same way, man. The first time I got on the tablet and I started getting an ad on damn near every video I tried to watch, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And, you know, of course you turn ad block off and go look, and it's like, wow, it really is like that on the website. You just never knew it because of all the add-ons. So,
yeah, I've never seen an ad on YouTube either.
I had sent some links to my mom, actually, and I had no idea how badly that website was covered in ads because I had never loaded. It was Instructables, right? I had never loaded it without ad block and no script running. I had no idea how bad that website was, and I was sending links to people with it. So, anyways, let's do the next one here. This one's from Computer World. Just a quick update on the Verizon Netflix row. Basically, Netflix has told Verizon to go get bent. It's like it's an error message, and you know Netflix is saying, no, we're just trying to keep it straight whose problem it is, because apparently they're getting the complaints, and Netflix, and of course Verizon's wanting to sue them for throwing this message up. So yeah, it's just funny. I want to see them in court over this stupid error message.
Please tell me Netflix is still using that error message.
It turns out it was a demo they were running to see how well such a thing would work. And I don't know if they've stopped doing it or not. So, short version, I don't really care, truthfully. But it's just kind of funny to watch because I really want to see them end up in court over this.
I hope so.
I kind of want to see that error message.
You know what? If you go into the link, they have a screenshot of it. The Verizon network is crowded right now, adjusting video for smoother playback. Basically, what they're doing is they're figuring out that you don't have as much bandwidth. They're comparing how you know the people on different ISPs do peak hours to off hours. And going, oh, well, normally people have an easy time watching HT from your ISP, but right now they're not, so obviously your network is crowded. And they'll throw the error message saying, hey, your network's crowded, we're going to turn off HD so you can stream it.
Yeah.
So, that's it. But you know, of course, Verizon is pissed at them for saying that, you know, something is wrong with their network. And I'm betting what's happened is a bunch of Netflix customers started calling Verizon's tech support saying, hey, Netflix is saying something's wrong with your network. What do we do? So, anyways, it's just funny. I want to see them end up in court over an error message. I really do.
I want to see a jury that actually understands it.
That's a good point. They're arguing about what's the better secure web browser in the chat room now. Sandboxy running on a live USB stick and the normal hard drive disconnected.
Why can't you have normal fans? You know, people are just threatening to send dead kittens to you, like Mad Men.
Well,
I really, really like that 8 now.
Yeah, that's true. So there's that. Let's do the last news story here. This one's from Ars Technica. Basically, Android is not going to display the updated permissions dialog anymore during updates. And on the app page in the store, instead of listing all the permissions when you try to install something, it's going to have just this generalized list. So instead of going through all the different kinds of personal information can list, it's just going to say, it can look at some of your stuff. You can click on the categories to get a little bit more information. But pretty much Android's going to stop saying, oh, by the way, now this thing can read your SD card, send text messages, and, you know, turn on the camera. I'm guessing Facebook has something to do with that, but just a thought.
That was a good feature.
Yeah, it was.
What the software you're putting on your phone does to your phone is a good idea.
And here's the fun part. The rest of the Ars Technical article is basically explaining that this is a good thing because most users are too stupid to understand what the permissions are in the first place.
That means you need more educated users, not get rid of the function.
Well, you know, I might be misrepresenting the article a little bit. No, I'm sorry. It's not the article saying that. It's somebody from Android saying that most people wouldn't understand it. So.
So they're too stupid to understand it, so we're not going to bother trying to tell them?
Yeah, basically.
They
probably were getting questions like, well, what does all this mean? I'm trying to install my card game, and it says it can send text messages. Well, that means don't install it. But, you know, trying to answer that question probably got old, so.
That means your card game can send text messages. It literally means that.
Well, why would my card game do that?
Because they want to fuck with you. Don't install it. Pick a different card game.
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining some of the people I've helped with this. But I like that card game. I want that card game. I just don't want it to send text messages. Well, don't. You know, you can't win those arguments. Tales from Tech Support. Fantastic subreddit, by the way.
I have a feeling.
I had to help someone that didn't know what a browser was.
Big blue E.
I even tried that. They didn't know what Internet Explorer.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had a conversation like this yesterday, didn't we, Madman?
I'm flashing back. That lady. It's that exact person, actually.
Yeah.
Forgot I had my soundboard. All right. Let's do this. So, back to our earlier conversation. When you're stalking somebody, and you've decided it's time to take that next step and break into their house and get on their computer, you need a tool to get past the password on their Windows box, right? I mean, We're not talking about Windows 98. You can't just click cancel and get past the password box.
Please tell me that's...
No, that was absolutely the case.
Yeah.
Windows 95, I think Windows 98, if the account was passworded, you could click cancel, and it would still take you to the desktop. On the password box.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an old trick, man.
So, anyways, let me... they're already throwing out some of the stuff in the chat room. It's like, but you could just boot up a live Linux. Yes, absolutely. But this tool is a script for Grub for DOS that will detect your Windows install and modify a DLL so it does not do the password validation.
So every password suddenly works.
Well, it just doesn't bother to check. You just, you know, punch in whatever the hell you want and hit OK and you get logged in. Because the DLL that checks it has been modified to allow it not to. And I think they had XP 7 and 8 all on there. I'd have to double-check the webpage again, but they were talking in the comments about getting 8 working, and there's two posts on there, so I think they have it working for 8 as well. Now, normally, if I was going to try to get on a machine and I just wanted files off the hard drive, absolutely, I'd grab a live Linux USB, boot it up, and grab it, because that way you're not even generating operating system logs, right? You just boot completely outside of the environment and grab what you need. Because... this absolutely will not work on an encrypted hard drive. But, but there are some...
blue screened.
No, I was typing in the chat room. There are some situations where you actually want to get into the running Windows install. For example, sometimes data that's in an application is a hell of a lot easier to get out of the application if you can boot the damn thing. Microsoft SQL is the first thing that comes to mind for that. But there's other programs that, you know, running that program is the best way to get the data you need versus trying to dump its files out, right? Especially if it's got a bunch of crap stored in the registry. Another thing is, and I meant to try this and I didn't get a chance, I'm wondering if you have a BitLocker encrypted folder, because that's based on user certificates, right? Like, not the whole hard drive, because then the tool won't work, but just your user folder. Well, it would be encrypted if you boot outside of the Windows thing, but if you boot into Windows and, you know, you use this thing to get past their password, I imagine it would decrypt it for you. Now, obviously, this isn't going to work in an enterprise, but if you're on somebody's home machine. I think probably the best use of this would be if you have to work on somebody's computer and they did not give you the password and you don't want to reset their password, go in, turn the checks off, go fix whatever the hell it is, turn the checks back on, give them their computer back kind of thing, you know, the tech support scenario.
Yeah.
So it's not... you know, the end-all, be-all of getting around things, because if you can boot this thing, you could just boot a live Linux USB, mount up the hard drive, and grab whatever you want file-wise, right? But, you know, there are some situations where getting into the actual operating system is handy. Sometimes, especially with the modern Windows systems, it's just easier to read the system logs that way. But it depends on the application. But a lot of stuff throws itself in Windows Event Viewer, and... whereas those are pretty well known, you can pull those out and dump them into anything. It's just easier sometimes to work with the machine. So, you know, if you've got a situation where you want to get into that Windows install, you know, maybe you just want to see how their desktop is arranged, see if they've gone through the time of, you know, lining up their icons to a wallpaper so you can say, look, they're insane.
The classic one, just print screen. Replace desktop.
Yeah, if you're pranking somebody, you want to set their homepage to Madman. That was it.
MyLazySundays.com.
Yeah, or what was the one I linked you guys the other day? The Gabe N song thing. I don't remember. Anyways,
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was full screen picture of Gabe N and really badly auto-tuned song playing. Anyways, yeah, so for pranks, this would be great. But, it's certainly not an end-all be-all. If the hard disk is encrypted, obviously it's not going to work. But, you know, you just make a little flash drive with Grub for DOS, install this script, and you're laughing. That way you don't... I know there was another one that did this by, doing a kernel patch in memory at boot. This one just modifies files on the hard disk. So... excuse me. So... Anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it, and hopefully we'll get working on it again here soon. Pure Decking every Thursday. Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. Again, the rest of the shows are pretty much on... ITN is on a short-term hiatus. I think all the other shows are on long-term hiatus. At least we're assuming short-term hiatus. Suave actually said?
No, there's no hard date return yet.
So
things
spotty.
Like that. So
sometimes just listen to the stream 24/7. You know, don't eat, don't sleep, don't even bother to go shit. Just sit in front of your computer listening to the stream for when IHN comes back.
Yeah, I strongly suggest developing a high tolerance to methamphetamine. That keep you going for weeks.
There you go. So
too easy.
There you go. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, and the subreddit. I have Cycros is saying he has Bluetooth headphones, so he's good to move about the cabin while listening to the stream 24/7, just in case. Actually, he says he can get all the way down the street. Good for him.
Wow, that's impressive.
Does so well playing Ingress. Wow, that is good range on those Bluetooth headsets. If you're just... I'm teasing. I know you're getting off the desk. Anyways. Yeah, he's like, but I was using the tablet, man. All right. That's it. I got to get the music up on my soundboard again. What did we decide we were using? That one.
There was no we about it. You decided.